The past. Sometimes it's a burden that's so heavy that it drags you down. Sometimes it's a ghost that ever haunts you. And just when you think you've outrun it and you've got it way behind you, it pops out and says, hi. Sometimes very unexpectedly. You can't escape your past. But you can confront it. Jacob of the book of Genesis had a past. It was not a pretty one. He had manipulated his brother Esau, taking from him what he wanted. And in a plot involving his own mother's schemes, had deceived his father to once again take from his brother what should have normally been his. Jacob had left a lot of broken furniture behind him when he left Canaan at the age of 40. But he goes to the region of Paddan Aram, to the place called Haran, to the family of his mother. And there his life changed. He spent 20 years there. And after those 20 years, he decided to do what he needed to do, really what he longed to do, and what God told him to do, even though it would be a very hard thing, and that is to go back to Canaan, to face his past. I hope you're appreciating what God has done for us in sharing through the pages of Holy Scripture the lives of these people in the Old Testament. I make no apologies for the amount of time we're spending on these characters. Their lives are fleshed out for a purpose. God is trying to teach us. God's trying to help us. And what will Jacob find when he returns to Canaan? And especially, what will happen with his brother? Turn with me to Genesis chapter 32 for this next installment of Jacob's life, which very simply is about peace. Genesis chapter 32. This is where we left off last Sunday. Starting in verse 1, Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." So he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, instructing them, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, and female servants. I have sent to tell my lord in order that I may find favor in your sight." There's no sneaking back into Canaan. Somehow or another, he knew where Esau would be, which was just outside of Canaan proper. He's not trying to avoid the past. He's confronting it. And as he comes into the land of Canaan, he once again encounters angels. As Jacob was leaving Canaan, the empty-handed fugitive, the angels of God appear to him in the vision of the ladder. Now as he returns, he sees angels once again. This was a message like the one 20 years ago. 20 years ago when he saw the angels, God affirmed to him, "I will take care of you." This is another reminder that God is still with him and will take care of him. You could say that everything in between these two visions of angels, it had been started, orchestrated, and completed by God. And God just sort of frames it with angels. This is his doing. And so Jacob doesn't skirt the pass. He sends for Esau. And the message to his brother is so interesting. He tells Esau, I'm your servant. And remember what the whole thing was about 20 years ago. Who was going to be the number one son in the family? Jacob says, I'm your servant. I've returned from Laban's. I've been blessed with abundance. You note that he doesn't just have flocks and herds. He's got servants. And he says, Lord, calls him Lord. I seek your favor. This is honest. It's humble, straightforward. Jacob knew if he's going to return home, he's got to confront Esau. Which means facing what he's done in the past. Which means facing the consequences of the past. In verse 6, we read about the response. And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he's coming to meet you. And there are 400 men with him. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He divided the people who were with him and the flocks and herds and camels into two camps, thinking if Esau comes to one camp and attacks it, then the camp that is left will escape. Given the gravity of his offenses toward his brother, given his brother's previous threat, given his brother's temperament, Jacob took this as a threat, this development, that he's coming with 400 men. You see, Jacob had changed, but he's quick to interpret these circumstances here in light of the fact that his brother had not changed. What else would he have to go on? And so he takes the precaution of dividing those who are his and that which is his, so that possibly if there is an attack, there will be survivors. That was the prudent thing to do. Practical thing. The next thing that he does is the important thing. Starting in verse 9. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac. O Lord, who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred that I may do you good. I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you've shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan and now I've become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau. For I fear him that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. What a simple but eloquent prayer. He shows humility. He shows gratitude. He shows confidence in God's promises. And he depends on God and God alone for deliverance. The bookends of the prayer, what he starts with and what he ends with, was the citing of the promises that God had made to him. He first cites the most recent promise, you go back to the land of Canaan, back to your kindred, and I'll take care of you. And then at the end, he references the early promise before he went to Haran when he was at Bethel, when God promised to take care of him, provide for him, and make his offspring as numerous as the sand on the seashore. And we see Jacob in this prayer. It's beautiful, isn't it? He takes his stand with the fathers. O God of my father Abraham, O God of my father Isaac. That's our narrative in Genesis. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And their faith in God. So what's it all about? And this so relates to Abraham, does it not? Because Abraham had to believe in the promises of God, even though the circumstances didn't confirm those promises. Abraham's going to have a child. He's going to have offspring as numerous as the stars in heaven, the sand on the seashore. He doesn't even have a child, and he's old, and his wife is old. He's called to believe in spite of circumstances. And here, Jacob, though he's facing what is seemingly threatening circumstances, he's called upon to trust God that his family will survive. Instead of wheeling and dealing, instead of manipulation and deceit, Jacob has laid those tools aside, hasn't he? He's entrusting himself to God. You think of all the trickery that he could have used in this situation. He had the resources. No. He just leans on God. He puts his life in his brother's hands and his fate in God's hands. He's proving to be a man of faith, isn't he? And recall what he said back in chapter 28 when he's leaving under the threat of his brother Esau in chapter 28. And he has the vision of the angels and God is making promises to him. And then Jacob makes promises to God, promises that he kept. We read in Genesis 28, verse 20. Then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. Is he returning in peace? He's got peace with God. I would have you to consider that Jacob's got peace with himself. But what about Esau? Is that even possible? We read next in verse 13, the next action that Jacob takes. So he stayed there that night, and from what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau. 200 female goats and 20 male goats. 200 ewes and 20 rams. By the way, if this is a present from what he's got, can you imagine how much he has? Let's keep reading. Verse 15. 30 milking camels and their calves. 40 cows and 10 bulls. 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. These he handed over to his servants, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, pass on ahead of me and put a space between drove and drove. He instructed the first. By the way, I want to stop and let you get this picture. It's like it's your birthday and they hand you one present and you unwrap it. And then they hand you another present and you unwrap it. And they hand you another one. He's got one drove. Here come the goats. Sees the goats. Then here comes another drove, the sheep. Then the camels. Then the cows. Then the donkeys. Wow. What gives? In verse 17, he instructed the first, when Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, to whom do you belong? Where are you going and whose are these ahead of you? Then you shall say, they belong to your servant, Jacob. They are a present sent to my lord, Esau. And moreover, he is behind us. See all the honesty here? No deceit. He likewise instructed the second and the third and all who follow the droves. You shall say the same thing to Esau when you find him. And you shall say, moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he thought, I may appease him with the present that goes ahead of me. And afterward, I shall see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. So the present passed on ahead of him. He himself stayed that night in the camp. I don't think this is trickery. It's not manipulation. And he's not trying to kiss up to Esau. This word in verse 20 that's translated in the English Standard appease, in your translation it might say pacify. In the English translations, appease or pacify, this is in the Hebrew, this is a word that means gift, tribute, offering, present, oblation, sacrifice. We just recently studied on Wednesday nights in the Law of Moses. There were these extensive instructions about how the Israelites in their worship to God, to find forgiveness with God or to make peace with God or to show their honor of God, they would bring gifts, goats and bulls and sheep. This is what you do to your God. You bring him gifts to honor him. Jacob is approaching Esau like one would his God or a superior that has been offended. Because everything Jacob is doing here, everything he's saying and doing, is indicating that he now sees and views and treats Esau as his superior. Besides, how would showing off his possessions defuse Esau when Esau was angry at Jacob in the first place for taking his birthright and blessing, which would have resulted in great possessions? That's the last thing you want to do, is rub in his face. How can this be the old Jacob coming through when he is so generous? The old Jacob was a taker, no matter what trick he had to pull to take. This Jacob is a giver. I believe this to be a display of respect. And even, which I think will become apparent later, it's an apology. And then, it's a strange thing, but really important. What happens overnight? 32 verse 22. The same night he arose and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had. And Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day has broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." A most mysterious incident that generates several questions, of which some we may not know the answer. What we need to do is understand what this event is signifying. Matter of fact, it's a cumulative event. Jacob wrestles here. He struggles and strives. When we were introduced to Jacob, what was he doing? Wrestling with his twin brother in the womb of his mother. When he first emerges into this world, what's he doing? He's got a hold of his brother. And here at the Jabbok, he once again is wrestling. These are bookended events. You could say there's two stories to Jacob. There's this part. From wrestling to wrestling. And then there's everything in light of that. Who was this struggling with Jacob? Well, it's clear in verse 30 that Jacob was aware that this was some kind of confrontation with God. I would have you to go over with me to the book of Hosea. This is one of those situations that happens a few times in Scripture when there is something that's not quite clear, and later on, something gets just dropped in by the Spirit of God, just strategically placed in case you were looking for it and you're wanting the answer, and finally you're like, ah, that's it. Jacob becomes Israel. And this Israel produces Israel, which is this nation with whom God will work. And we read in Hosea chapter 12, verse 2, the Lord has an indictment against Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways. There's a few times the prophets call Israel Jacob. He will repay him according to his deeds. In the womb, he took his brother by the heel. In his manhood, he strove with God. He strove with the angel and prevailed. He kept and sought his favor. He met God at Bethel, and there God spoke with us. Hosea tells us he's wrestling with God, but he's also literally wrestling with an angel, because angels were God's representatives on earth. And in the book of Genesis, there's a few strategic places where God does something on earth, a message or an action, through an angel. He's already done that with Jacob two other times. The angel is God's representative on earth. And the wrestling here is the second part of striving and struggling, where he literally is wrestling with someone, but it represents what's been going on in his whole life. What had happened in between Jacob's transformation? What had happened here is Jacob had been transformed. We talked about that last week. And this incident puts a cap on it. Look at the incident. At first, he thought it was a man. I mean, that's what it says there in verse 24. He wrestled with a man. But after he's wounded, and note how he's wounded by this man he's wrestling with. He just touches his hip. Who has the ability to just touch someone and do something like this? It's the power of God. And that's why he eventually makes the conclusion, I've seen God face to face. This is from God, this incident. God is involved in this incident. Now, seemingly, Jacob held his own in this match. He's pretty tough. And the angel here just touches him. And he's wounded severely, but Jacob still wouldn't let go. He has this dogged perseverance that's a hallmark of his trait. I mean, you think about it. He is chased out of Canaan, where he's poised to take over the family, and he has to leave Canaan. I mean, he's lost everything. But he goes up to Haran, and look what he does. This guy doesn't give up. It's what God likes about him. Jacob seeks a blessing. He fights for a blessing. Hasn't he been fighting for God's blessings all through his life? But at times he fought the wrong way, right? And he gets a blessing. In the heart of the event, you could even say this is the, culmination of this whole series, because the series is called How Jacob Becomes Israel, right? I mean, everything in his life is about this. what's the deal here? Well, Jacob, as we studied earlier on, literally meant at the heels or overreaching. You're in this position, somebody's in another position, you're grabbing at them. Literally, it's what he was doing coming out of the womb. The supplanter. You're trying to take somebody else's place. And this is what he did with Esau, with the birthright and the blessing. And the name was even associated later on with deceiver. That's what Esau says about him. He's rightly named because he's a deceiver. Because the way he went about trying to supplant was through deceit. Israel. Israel means strive. Or God strives. Or God fights. Literally, that's what it means. And the statement to follow explains the name changing. I mean, have you ever heard somebody's nickname? And you're like, how'd they get that nickname? I met this guy one time. Brother in Christ years ago, and occasionally still see him. And his name was Mickey. Everybody's calling him Mickey. And I find out that's not his real name. I'm like, is that like part of your name? No. I said, why are you, everybody calls you Mickey. His wife called him Mickey. He said, because I played baseball when I was young and I was pretty good and everybody called me Mickey for Mickey Mantle. And it stuck. So sometimes you got to have an explanation of a name. Israel strive. Well, why is he called that? The text tells us, you've striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Indeed, we've seen that, haven't we? Jacob struggled with God and men. Early in his life, he struggled with doing things his way against the way of God. He had manipulated and deceived people, even his own brother and father. He had also struggled with Laban regarding the wives and the flocks and the herds. And we're told that he had striven and prevailed. How has he prevailed? Let's dissect this in light of his life. How has Jacob prevailed? In a way, he prevailed over men by winning the birthright and the blessing away from his brother Esau, but he did it at great cost. It's hard to call that a victory. He finally won over Laban by getting the wife that he wanted, taking his wives and servants and children and the flocks and herds that rightly belonged to him. He was able to get all that, but only because God had blessed him and he credited God with that. He had not prevailed over God in a sense that God wanted him to do one thing and he resisted God and he got to do it his way. No, the Jacob that we've come to know is one who came to rely upon God and submit to God. He had just been literally wrestling, and in a way, wrestling with God on the banks of the Jabbok, but that was symbolic of what he'd been doing all his life. All his life he's been wrestling with God. And understand, though he strove with this angel representing God, he didn't whip the angel. I would have you see that it's like this. Have you ever wrestled with a little kid? Maybe your son or your daughter or a grandson or a nephew. And you sort of just let them, you know, do a little bit. But you know, at any time, you can just pick them up, you know, kind of thing. But you sort of let them have a contest with you. Oh, you're on top of me. Ah, you know, you're sort of letting them compete with you. But at any time, you can just push them to the side or pick them up and throw them on the bed or whatever. Here, just at a touch, the angel incapacitated Jacob. There's no contest here. The point was not about who would whip whom. The point was about the striving. And Jacob kept striving. So how had he prevailed? Well, this is symbolic. His real strivings and wrestlings had been with God all along. Even in the Esau incident and the Laban incidents. And that night on the banks of the Jabbok symbolized that. At first he thought it was a man, but he realized at the end it's God. And Jacob prevailed by struggling with God and finally learning how to trust and give in to God. By allowing God to defeat him, break him, change him, that's how Jacob prevailed. What does it mean that Jacob prevailed? Everything that we've been studying about him and his transformation. Jacob prevailed because he persevered with God. Jacob prevailed because he wouldn't give up. Jacob prevailed, he wouldn't let go of all this. Jacob prevailed because he gave in to God's discipline. He became God's man. And in that, he was victorious. The names Jacob, that's the fleshly tactics for selfish gain. You're grabbing what somebody else is. Israel, you're striving but giving in to God and becoming his dependent. With Laban, he'd learned to go about service and letting God work out the justice. Laban didn't treat him fairly. But Jacob kept serving, doggedly serving, in hardship serving, and let God work out the justice. With Esau, he's come home. He's decided to confront Esau and let God work out the deliverance. And as we said before, Jacob's life is our life. We are everyone in a great struggle. We oftentimes talk about life's a struggle. Yeah, life's a struggle, but the real struggle is with God. It involves other people sometimes, but really the struggle is with the Lord, his way or my way, relying on him or relying on self, carnal tactics or righteous deeds, fleshly methods or spiritual methods. We're Jacob. And what will determine whether we prevail or not, whether we're victorious or not, is if we let God conquer us and change us. Do we understand this when we submit to God that we're truly victorious? It's only going to happen with a fight. God's not going to easily give up on us. Our old selfish man with his fleshly ideas and ways, he dies slowly, but die he must. And we must be renamed. When do you name someone? When they're born. Or when they're born again. Jacob is wrestling when he's born. And now he's born again out of this wrestling. And if you glance ahead, you know, it's like when you're reading a good book, you can't help but to peek. We'll read this in just a moment. But in verse 31, when this angel left and Jacob got up, he limped. He limped. He bore in his body the evidence of a struggle. He had a wound. The flesh on which he'd relied had failed him. You can't whip an angel. They can just touch you and incapacitate you. His body was crippled, but Jacob, or shall we say Israel, was whole. Because his faith was complete. Are there signs that you've wrestled with God? Does your pride ever get wounded? Does your dishonesty ever get injured, or your selfishness, your worldly desires be damaged? Has your fleshly man ever been crippled more so even crucifying. That's God's process for us. Do you show the signs of being broken in the flesh? That's why sometimes in the flesh, in our worldly experiences, we have to experience injury and brokenness. But are we broken in the flesh but reborn in the spirit? And so here he comes out of his little camp, his solo camp. In chapter 32, verse 31, the sun rose upon him as he passed Penuel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming in 400 men with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two female servants. He put the servants with their children in front, then Leah with her children, and Rachel and Joseph last of all. He himself went on before them, bowing himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. What a sight that must have been for Esau. Here comes his brother, limping. Stopping and bowing. Limping. Bowing. Limping. Bowing. Limping. Bowing. Yeah, I won't do it all 7 times. Limping. Bowing. Limping. Bowing, limping, bowing. Where's the great deceiver? Where's the trickster? What's he got up his sleeve this time? Where is son number one? The one who for 20 years has possessed the birthright and the blessing. Is this the younger one who was destined to rule over his older brother? Is this the one, does he appear to be the one that his father Isaac, in giving him the blessing, said, let people serve you and nations bow down to you, be lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you. Is that what you see here? In the flesh, you don't see them. But in the plan of God, that's exactly who Jacob is. To Esau, Jacob must now appear to be strange, small, even pitiful. And how Jacob approached Esau, and what it meant. He approached him in the messengers that went before him by calling him Lord. He approached him by giving gifts ahead of time. And he approached him by bowing. Jacob acts as if he's the subject. And Esau is the superior one. Though the past was irreversible, Jacob will forever hold the birthright and blessing. This is Jacob's way of restoring what he'd taken from his older brother. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him. And they wept. This has been a long time coming. Let's read it again. Then Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. we've seen what's happened to Jacob. His life was displayed for us in the scriptures. What's happened to Esau? Don't know exactly. Had Esau set out for an attack, it sure did look like it. But somehow changed his mind because of Jacob's gestures of gifts and honor and respect and submission. Had he melted his brother's heart? Has time put things in perspective and Esau came to him a different man? Had Esau matured? Had he come to realize that he'd been foolish in trading away his birthright for a pot of stew? Had the loss of his brother and the estrangement from his parents because of his marriages taught him, let's let bygones be bygones. And all that matters is Jacob, you're home. Perhaps we'll never know. But we do know this, that if Jacob could forgive, you can. Who's your Jacob? And if you're a Jacob, who's your Esau? Reconciliation is possible. Isn't it time for it? After the hugging and the kissing and the weeping, they finally start talking. Because, you know, when you're hugging and kissing and weeping, you can't. But they gain composure. And in verse 5, when Esau lifted up his eyes and saw the women and children, he said, "Who are these with you?" Jacob said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." We emphasized this in the class this morning. For some time now, since his last days in Haran and throughout the rest of his life, you'll see Jacob, everything is about God. His explanation, his understanding is about God. Who does that remind us of? It's Joseph. What you're seeing right here is the seeds for that attitude of Joseph, that son born in his latter life, that evidently he'd spiritually groomed. Verse 6, then the servants drew near, they and their children, and bowed down. Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And last, Joseph and Rachel drew near, and they bowed down. Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company that I met?" Jacob answered, "To find favor in the sight of my Lord." But Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." Did you see that? Jacob called Esau my Lord, but Esau called Jacob my brother. Jacob said, "No, please, if I have found favor in your sight, then accept my present from my hand. For I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of God, and you've accepted me. Please accept my blessing that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough." And thus he urged him, and he took it. Are these the same people? Before, Jacob and Esau had selfishly contended for the same things. Jacob had literally swiped out from under Esau's nose what should have gone to Esau. Esau vowed to kill his own brother because he had taken what should have gone to him, the birthright and the blessing which would have resulted in great abundance physical abundance. Now, Jacob and Esau don't want what the other one has. They're unselfish. And for Jacob to be accepted by his brother, that was nothing compared to the donkeys and the camels, milking camels, by the way, and sheep and goats. That's nothing, because he says, it's like a gift from God that you've accepted me. To see his brother was like seeing God, because you see, this was all about Jacob and God. And here Jacob has found peace in the sight of his brother, which had completed his peace with God. Esau said in verse 9, I have enough. And Jacob said in verse 11, I have enough. Literally meaning, I have all that I need. I have all that I need. Yes, they're talking about the flocks and the herds, but does not this run deeper than that? In the peace they found with one another, they had enough. They had plenty. They had all they needed. To be at peace with God and with your brother, that's all we need. But in spite of this beautiful reconciliation, I could sit and read this all day. Couldn't you? In spite of this beautiful reconciliation, they go their separate ways because it's God's will that they will be separate peoples. And so this is how Jacob became Israel. God had brought him back to Canaan in peace, and Jacob, or shall we say Israel, has striven through all these things and has prevailed, because now he was a man of faith. Faith is the victory. His strivings made him Israel, but his struggles aren't over. There are struggles we have that make us who we are. And then there are struggles we must endure, and it's not always clear why. For in his remaining years, he will face new trials as Israel. One more sermon. Brother John's going to lead us in another hymn. If there's a soul here who does not want to be apart from home, the Father, and the blessings of his home, his kingdom, and his people. If you're prepared to obey the gospel of Christ today, you understand what that means, we'll be so pleased to assist you. If you need to respond, won't you come as we stand and sing?